Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Steve Jones Show. A lot to talk about today. Kevin's rant certainly has drawn a lot of, well, criticism, it turned out, along the way. A lot of people fell in line with Bob Buhner and me on that, and I'm not really surprised based on the reaction we have on Facebook, Twitter, and also online. Kevin gave it his best shot yesterday, declared victory, and now has run up the white flag of surrender again. But that's exactly how this show goes. In the end, it's popular opinion that really dictates the direction we go with this. And Kevin gave it a shot for a good 35, 40 minutes yesterday. And in the end, it was like the Wright brothers trying to go up against an FA team. Now, as for today's show, the Australian Open is underway and now into the quarterfinal round. For the 35th consecutive Grand Slam tournament, Roger Federer is in a quarterfinal. It's amazing. And plus, the women's side is loaded with drama. Patrick McEnroe is going to join us from Melbourne. We'll talk to him about the tournament and much more. But first, the guy that you're above the noise. Welcome back. Great to have you with us today. Patrick McEnroe from Melbourne. Tomorrow, Aaron Carter, Center Daily Times on college basketball. We'll also be joined tomorrow by Ron Cook of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We bring in now Kevin Herr, who yesterday ate up a half hour of the program explaining something we still don't really know.
That's because you just didn't listen well.
No.
I just didn't listen well.
No, I talked to Buhner afterward, and and Buhner's a highly intelligent man. Highly intelligent. He didn't get it either.
Anything to be right. I'm telling you. I tell you what.
What are you talking about? You're running around declaring victory, and everybody's confused as to what you talked about.
I'm completely victorious. I still declare victory. I shan't concede.
Bill Belichick is not contractually obligated to do his post-game interview.
Interesting. I was trying to find that out yesterday, and I couldn't find anything hard either way.
But name the other coach that didn't do a post-game interview.
Name the other coach that didn't do a post in a championship game? Or
yeah.
I don't know.
Jim Harbaugh Sunday, and he won.
No, he was in a. He had an interview.
Au contraire, he did not do an interview with Fox. He did a post-game press conference, which is the same thing Belichick did.
Well, maybe Fox didn't ask him.
No, they asked him.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and he said no. Okay?
I didn't take notice to that. I did not.
It's not a question of taking notice to it. It's just, it's today's, because Shannon Sharp said it. That's been the focal point. But that's not the only guy. I'm not here to defend Bill Belichick. That's not my point here. It's not why we're doing this. Okay? But I don't like double standards. I can't stomach double standards.
No, if he wasn't, if he's not contractually obligated.
It's like a reporter coming out of an interview and saying, you know, I found him to be very credible. The same guy that grabs a report and like goes on the air frantically minutes afterward and didn't really read it. I wonder who that could be. Who could that be?
Hmm. I did not know that. I wasn't sure if he was supposed to have done it and just chose not to do it. I'm better knowing that now. I feel better about that now.
I don't care. It's a football coach.
I would still like to see him do it, the interview.
Oh, what does it matter? The sportsmanship part was the part where he sought Harbaugh out. That's the sportsmanship part. Talking to Steve Tasker, that's just petty. That's just petty.
And again, I ask, when did you stop becoming a fan?
It's stupid stuff like that. I'm sorry. They're not the focal point of the story. The game is. Okay? Stop being a fan. I don't really care. Who watches the postgame show? I don't. I didn't even see him say it.
I actually watched the postgame show.
No, I didn't because, for one thing, CBS thought the game wasn't big enough to send their crew to Foxborough.
You know what? They haven't done that in quite some time.
Well, it's their mistake. They're missing out on the atmosphere of it, being a part of it, being there in the fabric of it,
because
the excitement
of
it.
I remember a few years ago, Sean Carey and I here at the station were talking, being both big Steeler fans, and said, wow, it's going to be really great to have Coach Cower back in Pittsburgh for the game, and he wasn't there.
No,
neither was anybody else.
They don't do it. They feel it's a cost-saving measure. That's why. They say it's a cost-saving measure.
But as for Harbaugh not doing a postgame, I did not know that simply because I didn't watch the postgame on Fox because the other game was just about ready to get underway.
Right.
So I switched
Nobody
over.
Cares. See, the only people that care are CBS. Okay? They care. America's general public doesn't care.
I mean, when I try and set up an interview with a coach, I was hopeful that he or she will actually do the interview. I mean, I've been on the sidelines at halftime and catching a coach on the way in after a half that was absolutely horrid. I mean, I've done that interview before. It's not a fun interview to have, but you keep the questions quick and to the point and then let them go.
Yeah, but guess what? They're not obligated.
But that's good to know. Like I said, I'm not as upset now knowing that he wasn't obligated and just blew it off.
Look,
it was
worthless.
An option.
They're worthless. What do you get out of it? They played great. We didn't play so well. Wow. I feel better now.
Yeah, but I don't know why I like it. I just like it. I mean, I don't know why. It's like, you know what? I love pizza. I don't know why I like pizza. I just do.
I do. It tastes great.
You missed the point completely.
I love pizza because it tastes great. Okay? I love cheese and sauce. I like, you know.
But the point is, I don't really know why I think it tastes great.
A little thicker than Little Caesars, pizza. Okay? Okay? Little New England, New York style. Okay? New England, New York style. Love that.
My point is, I don't know why I like the flavor of pizza. I just know I like it.
Because it matches up. Okay? Watching a guy in a losing... I mean, every time they go to the losing coach, I'm always like, oh my God, this is going to be torture.
No, see, I'm the other way. I'm like, wow, I'd really like to hear, you know, what he felt didn't quite work as well as they thought it would. You
know, that's why I go over to NFL Network, watch his press conference.
Yeah, but I don't want to sit through the 18 other questions that are absolutely pointless. On third down and five, did you run the ball to the left when the right side was open?
The three or four questions they're asked by these people are pointless. We are sideline reporters, okay, unless they're giving me injury updates or an interpretation of a rule because they're there, don't do anything else, okay? What do they do? Some of them I personally like. When Jack Arute did it, I thought he was great. I like Holly Rowe in terms of her professionalism as to what she does. But most of them are, I mean, most coaches look at them confused by, what kind of question is that? What is that?
Yeah, but I mean, most post-game press conferences, too.
Well, yeah, I understand that. I'm just saying, but Shannon Sharp took an opportunity, as did Terrell Suggs, to rip the Patriots and Bill Belichick, okay? And we know where Shannon Sharp used to play.
Yes.
Okay? Okay. Why he felt that he had to, I have no idea.
Steve, I have Buzz on the line from Northumberland for you.
Hi, Buzz.
Hey, guys. You just said something, Steve, that was so interesting, and I do the same thing, and I never realized it until I just heard you say that. I never watched the post-game shows, and I don't know why, and now all of a sudden I realize, because it's not the game. I watch the game. I don't watch the post-game show.
Buzz, I don't watch the pre-game shows.
Oh, I don't either. You know, I just, you know, if a game starts at 1, I turn on the TV at 1 minute of 1.
Exactly. Yep. You know. I'm with you, Buzz. You're right on the mark. I'm with you.
That's great to know. I'm really surprised, and I'm glad to hear that, because I really just, you know, this. And I think one of the greatest things that was ever said, though, on one of those shows was, I can't remember the guy's name. He used to be the coach of the Bucks. He was Tampa Bay Buccaneers back in the 70s or so, and the reporter asked him one day on the show, Coach, what do you think of your team's execution? And he said, I think it's a great idea.
John McKay, I'm in favor of it.
Yes.
It was John McKay, and I'm in favor of it. How do you feel about your team's execution? I'm in favor of it.
We can't win at home. We can't win on the road. I'd like to have a neutral site.
I used that at a quarterback club one day, Buzz, and Joe could not stop laughing.
My favorite is we didn't block well, but we made up for it by not tackling.
That's right in there with Chip. Coach, why do you think your team lost today? Well, the other team scored more points than us. You know?
Exactly. But I don't watch the pregame shows.
Yeah.
I don't watch the postgame. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Worthless.
I watch the game. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Later.
Now, why do they have the pregame show and why do they have the postgame show?
For guys like me that like to hear the analyst view on things.
Yeah, but they're not good.
Well, I'm sorry.
Well, no,
sorry, they don't read the standards.
No, but you know
they're
what?
They're good to me.
No, but this Dick Girardi and I talked about this on Sunday. Okay, and we were watching the game because Aikman and Sims just had whatever days. Okay, I mean they said nothing. All right, and I am tremendously personally. I told Dick this. I'm tremendously and personally spoiled by working with Jack Ham and working with Dick, who say something, okay, who analyze and see the game. And Jack talks about, you know, linebackers scraping on a blitz and what that means. And he talks about, you know they're in a cover three. They want you to make that throw into a cover three, right? They're in cover zero. They're playing Tampa 2. That's why this part of the field was open because of Tampa 2. And things like that. I mean, when they're talking about stuff like that, I'm tremendously spoiled as to what I'm watching on TV because what I'm hearing from other analysts doesn't match the quality of the guy I'm working with 6 hours a week. Okay? With Dick Girardi, it's the same thing. Okay? Most of these guys just don't get it. I mean, Dick's out there talking about, you know, inbounds plays, possessions, clock management, things like that. He's talking about all these things that are all important to winning a game, okay, or losing a game, instead of some general, hey, we talked to you the other day, you know, they all get together for pizza on Tuesdays, they have big kumbaya, who cares, okay? I see my problem with watching TV and listening to radio is that the two guys I work with are so good at what they do that when I hear other people attempt to do it, it's substandard to me. Phil Sims is not Jack Ham. Troy Aikman is not Jack Ham.
Well, see, when you talk
Dick
about
Dick Vitale.
Yeah.
Dick Vitale's not Dick Girardi. Len Elmore's not Dick Girardi.
See, I like the studio shows because I like Dan Marino's thoughts. I like Cowher's thoughts. And when you go to Fox, I really like Howie Long and I like Terry Bradshaw's thoughts. Now, I realize two of those guys are affiliated with the Steelers. That really has nothing to do with it. I really like their thoughts on things. Then when you talk about the analyst of the game, that's a different story. That's why I watch the pre- and post-game shows.
I mean, what gets me is there's a real lack of depth now on network TV when that should actually be increasing. So, honestly, I mean, when I hear Shannon Sharp whine, moan, and complain that Bill Belichick didn't talk to Steve Tasker so he could tell him that the Ravens played better, so what? All right? Get your check. I mean, that's not analyzing the game. Is that analyzing the game?
I'll tell you a guy that's really, really good at what he does is Patrick McEnroe. Australian Open, we go to Melbourne next.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. We have found out that Kevin can ramble for a half an hour on the show like yesterday and confuse Bob and me tremendously, then declare victory.
You two just didn't listen close enough.
It was like shoveling garbage against the tide. I mean, it was.
It's in the podcast. You can hear it again, so you can listen closer.
I don't have that kind of time. And today, that he watches every pregame show and postgame show and finds them intriguing.
Not everyone, but I do watch a little bit of each one, except ESPN. I really don't like ESPNs.
Sacrilege.
I know.
Wow. Do they know?
I don't think they're worried.
Maybe. Well, speaking of ESPN, they have all four Grand Slam tournaments now. This will be the third consecutive year they've had all four. They've had the Australian Open for many, many years. And we have now worked our way to the semifinal, quarterfinal round of the Australian Open, the first Grand Slam, the first major of the year. We go to Melbourne, and we are joined by Patrick McEnroe. Patrick, welcome. Great to have you with us. Roger Federer in his 35th consecutive Grand Slam quarterfinal. What does that tell us about the greatness and the consistency of Roger Federer?
I think you got to do both. I mean, I think, 35 straight quarterfinals or better, that comes out to be almost 9 years. I mean, think about that for a second. 9 years where the guys made the quarterfinals or better in each of the four majors every single year. So, I mean, forget about just what that says about him as a player and as a competitor, but just the fact that nothing's ever happened where, you know, he was sick or he was injured or he had a fight with his wife or, you know, and anything like that has, you know, probably some of those things did happen, but you never know about it. So it is remarkable. I mean, I marvel at how he continues to move as well as even the two guys that are maybe slightly ahead of him on a hard court, which would be Djokovic and Murray, who are two of the best athletes I've ever seen play tennis from a movement standpoint. And Federer continues to do that. So he's slapped down a couple of young guys here, Tomic and last night against the big serving Raonic of Canada. He just slaps them aside in straight sets and just sends the message, hey, I'm not ready to give up anything yet.
Djokovic had a just a fabulous match the other night where he was just pushed and pushed and pushed. What did you see in that match that showed vulnerability but also championship mettle?
Yeah, I think he was surprised at how well Wawrinka, who's always been a talented player, he's kind of been the second fiddle to Federer in Switzerland. He's been the second best player there for a long time. He's been in right around the top 10, between 10 and 15 through most of his career. So he's a dangerous player, but I think he definitely caught Novak by surprise by how aggressive he was early on, got up a set and a break. It looked like Djokovic had turned it around and was going to win it in four, and Wawrinka, you know, did an unbelievable job to get it to five. So I think what it showed is that if you go up against Novak, you've got to come out there and take some chances. If you can hit the ball big, you can rattle him a little bit. But at the same time, I mean, this guy's an incredible fighter. He's got an unbelievable staying power as far as his endurance and what he's able to do, clawing back into these matches. And obviously, you know, he played this match was over 5 hours. So he had two of those matches last year in the semis and the finals. Obviously, the big question will be how he comes back in his match coming up next against Thomas Burdick, who's another guy who's got a lot of firepower, and certainly that could bother him. If he gets through this match, he should, I think, walk into the final pretty easily. But this is a match certainly coming up that the ill effects of that, the physicality of the last match and the fact that he finished very, very late at night, so it sort of throws off your whole time clock and preparation, that will be tested tonight against Burdick.
What has the role of the heat been so far down there?
There's only been really one day that it got really hot. That was the first Thursday of week one. Other than that, it's actually been really pleasant. It's been mid-70s to mid-80s. It's actually been quite cool in a lot of the night matches. The great thing about this event is that over the years, it's really become a night-centered event, particularly in week two. So every match, pretty much every match going forward that the big guys will play is going to be at night. There'll be one day match today and then Djokovic at night. And then tomorrow you'll have the other side of the quarterfinals. You'll have Murray probably playing in the day and Federer again at night. Then the semis and finals are both night matches or all night matches. On the women's side, it's a little bit different. They're a little more heavy during the afternoon matches. But it really hasn't been a factor because it hasn't been that hot. It's supposed to get a little bit warmer. I believe on Thursday, but nothing like that one day where it was, you know, well over 100 through most of the day. And those are just brutal conditions. And that's really where tennis almost becomes secondary. It's more about survival and who's fitter and who can handle those conditions better. Luckily, that hasn't happened this year. And it's really been about the tennis on the court, which is what we all want to see.
Azarenka is the defending champion, and she's also the number one seed. Yet Serena and Sharapova have dominated headlines. Is it unusual to see a number one seed defending champion seemingly under the radar?
Yeah, you know, it normally it is, but in the women's game the last couple of years, it's sort of become the norm because Serena, having just sort of really worked her way back last year, you know, she hasn't yet, her ranking hasn't caught up to her domination yet, which it could happen here if she wins this title. She should get to number one, which would be great for women's tennis because, I mean, clearly Serena is the best player. I actually would still favor Azarenka over Sharapova if they played head-to-head at this tournament. I think she's a little more athletic, and she hits the ball pretty big. I mean, Sharapova has been dominating opponents, but Sharapova has a tendency to beat up on players beneath her. But if she goes up against a Serena, obviously anybody goes up against Serena is probably going to come second at this point. She looks that good. But even Azarenka can handle Sharapova's firepower off the ground, and she's a better athlete. She's a better mover. So I expect Sharapova to get to the final because she's in the bottom half. And unfortunately for Azarenka, she drew Serena in her semifinal if they both win their next matches. And, I mean, Serena was just downright awesome in her last match, beating Kirilenko, who's a quality opponent. And, you know, the thing about Serena, which is amazing to me, is that, you know, she's always been a great competitor. She's always been a phenomenal server and athlete. Now she's become a student of the game as well in the last year or so. And I think that her becoming a student of the game basically means she's playing more percentage tennis. She's not making as many unforced errors. She's understanding how to use her weapons. And because of all of that, she's playing, I believe, the best tennis she's ever played, and she's pretty much unbeatable.
And then she's allowing the game to come to her, picking her spots, but also using her ability to then put the other on the defensive.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great analogy. I mean, I think she now understands the game of tennis a lot better. And I think this coach that she's been with now for almost a year, the French coach, has really helped her. It's given her some distance from her dad, who obviously coached her a lot as a kid, and you know, certainly was a big part of both her and Venus's success. But I think now Serena's just that she's appreciating sort of the process of being a tennis player. I mean, it reminds me a lot of what Andre Agassi did late in his career,
right?
When he first came out, he was a basher. He went out there and basically let his talent do the talking. And then in that latter stage of his career, when he sort of turned the corner in his life, he then became really a student of the game. And I think and Serena's doing that, but she's comparatively for the men and the women, she's even a better athlete than Agassi was as a player. I mean, she's a better server. She's a better mover. She's got more firepower. And so to see her playing this kind of tennis is actually just a pleasure to see because you're seeing her, I think, finally reach her absolute potential. She's always been a great champion. She's always been the best fighter I've ever seen. But now she sort of put the whole package together. And now the only question is how many records is she going to be able to break? You know, by being in her early 30s, is she going to be able to stay healthy enough and focused enough for the next 3-4 years? It sounds like she is, and that's great for her, and that's great for women's tennis.
What has ESPN been able to do by garnering all four majors, all four Grand Slam events, and by getting it all on one network and concentrating it the way they have?
Well, I think we've been able to obviously get to, you know, tell the stories throughout the whole year. We know the players, I think, better than anyone. We know the ins and outs of the tour. So, you know, our team is able to put together these great behind-the-scenes packages and really get a sense of what goes on, not just when the players take the court. So, I mean, our production team has done an amazing job. We've gotten great support from the bosses in Bristol as far as, you know, really pulling out all the stuff to cover the sport the way it deserves to be covered. And I think for the fan, you know, there's still some jumping around that's done at the majors, but I think the continuity of knowing that ESPN is always going to be there, certainly it helps tennis overall to get into the big machinery of what ESPN does, whether it's, you know, us in the radio and Sports Center and all that stuff. So I think that really has helped grow the sport. You know, tennis has always been somewhat of a niche sport, but I think ESPN's interest and involvement in promoting the sport and getting behind it is certainly making it, I believe, more popular and even for the casual fan to get a little more interest in the game.
You, of course, host talk radio in New York, so your topics are the Giants, the Knicks, and whatever, the Yankees, whatever it happens to be. How refreshing is it for you just to get out and just talk tennis for a couple weeks?
Well, it's refreshing to do both for me because tennis has obviously been my life since I was 3 years old. I first picked up a racket and obviously with my brother playing tennis. So I you know, tennis has given me everything in my life. So, I mean, I love the sport so much. And doing the radio has actually been sort of a nice respite for me from tennis, you know, because I've always been a huge sports fan. I've always loved the local teams in New York, and I'm always a fan of what people like you do in radio. And I have a huge appreciation now for, what, you know, to do that. I just do my show at the moment once a week on a Saturday, but to come in and the light goes on and you're on and to talk for 2 or 3 or 4 hours, whatever it is another kind of learned skill. So I really love it. I love the fans in New York and I love the feedback you get from the people. I've always loved just the genre of radio.
Yeah.
You know, and being able to talk to people back to back live and not know what the heck anybody's going to say. So I love that. But actually, you know, coming down to Australia in the middle of our winter and coming down here to summer is, I miss my girls, you know, my girls at home, my wife, but it's a nice break to come down here to the middle of summer.
All right. So I had to ask you about the Knicks, by the way, who are in a real tough fight right now with Brooklyn late in the fourth.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. I know the Knicks, it sounds like from what I'm reading on the tweets that they're relying a little too much on Melo, and that's sort of unfortunately the way things have been going the last couple of weeks.
So tell me, what do the Knicks need to do when you watch them that can make them a team that can threaten Miami? Because right now they're just a game behind Miami in the standings.
Well, I think when Shumpert comes back and he's 100% healthy, he's certainly a guy that's going to give them that the defense that they need to guard or potentially guard LeBron and Wade. I mean, that's where they struggle. I still think that Stoudemire has not quite found his niche yet. To me, he needs to be more of an inside presence and not so much just an offensive scorer. But, I mean, I love to see the guy hit the boards and play more defense. And, you know, I think what Jason Kidd has brought to the team has been invaluable from the standpoint as a leader, as a guy who understands basketball better than anyone. But, you know, some of those role players that they picked up, obviously the injury problems are happening with Wallace and with Kidd and Felton being out. So if they get 100% healthy, and, you know, I think the job that Woodson has done has been phenomenal, you know, getting buy-in from all the players. But this is really the test for them, is going through some tough times and then seeing how they come out on the other side.
What play, it's interesting you mentioned Shump, because I remember Penn State playing Georgia Tech and doing the game down in Atlanta. I was really impressed with him as a freshman, now to see him on this level playing well. What plays in New York in that show of yours? What plays where you know this is the topic I have to hit, this is what the fans will respond to, and what won't they respond to?
Well, they definitely respond to the Knicks. I mean, the Knicks, I think, hit the chord with a lot of sort of real New York fans. Certainly football, I mean, I think football and baseball are basically the two biggest sports. So obviously the whole Jet debacle this year was a, you know, it's like a soap opera, and
yeah.
It's horrible for, you know, I'm a Jet fan. I grew up a Jet fan. We grew up 10 minutes from Shea Stadium and we used to go to the games, perfect PAT and Richard Hot Toddy and all that business. So I've seen it all, and then you have the Giants who just go about their business in a different sort of way and have great success year after year, although I thought this year was a huge disappointment for them. But the Jets are just like a joke, so people just obviously you can't get enough of talking about the Jets. Baseball obviously is big when the baseball season comes around, and if the Yankees don't, win the World Series, it's a disaster. The Mets have been a bit of a debacle the last couple of years as well. And, when I started doing my show last spring, it was nice buzz with the Rangers. So the Rangers, when the playoffs come around, hockey gets somewhat interesting for some diehard hockey fans. And that's pretty much it. And then you get usually the New York fans are very much into the New York story. So once in a while you'll get, a Lance Armstrong type of story or the Baseball Hall of Fame that will spark some interest. But for the most part, you start talking Jets and Tebow during this season, or you start talking Rex Ryan or now the Knicks, and the phone lines light up instantaneously.
All right. One final question for you, then I'll let you go because you've had obviously a long day. But there's one thing to be a player. It's another thing to then get behind a microphone and translate that knowledge on the air and do it in a concise way. What was the easiest part of the transition for you, Patrick? And then what was the toughest part of the transition? Because at the moment, you make it look completely easy and natural.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, the easiest part was that I love the sport. And I guess as a kid and coming up and then as a pro, I sort of got used to answering a lot of questions because I was John's little brother. So even when I was a 17, 18-year-old playing junior tennis, I did a lot of interviews and then I got asked a lot of questions. So as a player, I wasn't blessed with great speed or great power, but I was part of my strength, was my ability to sort of read my opponents and read the game and understand, what I could do to have a chance to beat good players. So I think that translated pretty easily because I think I was able to then, be able to describe to people what was going on the court. And really, I just think about trying to entertain people and trying to educate them. I mean, those are the two things that I think about when I'm doing a match and when I get out there. And it's as Bruce Springsteen said when he got ready to go do it, he says he thinks of two things whenever he gets ready to do a show. There are two thoughts that have to be somewhat coinciding with each other. One can't be too big than the other one. And the two thoughts are, tonight is the most important night of my life, and it's only rock and roll. And he says, if there's any imbalance in that, he says, I don't think I'd do a good show. But if they're in balance, then people have a good time. So I try to do that with tennis. I think the toughest part has been, especially for me when I first started, and even for the years I was a Davis Cup captain and now continuing to work with a lot of young players with the USDA, is, being critical of players and doing it in a way that's not going to offend them. And obviously that doesn't always work out that way. I mean, I had plenty of times when I was a Davis Cup captain representing the country and working with our best players that they got pissed off at me, because when I'm on TV, I've got to be critical of them and about what they're doing on the court. So I think that balance over the years has been the trickiest thing to navigate and to understand that you're there as a commentator to explain what you see and not make it personal, but also do your service to the fans and the tennis people that are watching.
Patrick, an absolute pleasure. We appreciate the time you gave us, and best of luck rest of the way down as you enjoy winter and summertime in Melbourne.
Sounds good. I'm sure I'll be tracking you down for my show in New York when college football season comes around again.
All right, Patrick, thank you. Patrick McEnroe from Melbourne on the Australian Open. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this.
Hello, 2013. That means Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying customers for 98 years. I'd say if you need a recommendation on where to buy your next new vehicle, there's probably been 50,000 customers you could ask. Sunbury Motors Ford sold the most F-150 pickup trucks in the entire Philadelphia zone. They're the number one F-Series dealer. Unbelievable. SMC has 99 F-Series available starting at $21,954. If you're looking
looking at awards, Sunbury Motors Hyundai ended 2012 as the number one Hyundai dealer in customer satisfaction in the Eastern Sales District. Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 23 Hyundai Elantras starting at $17,490. Sunbury Motors Kia wants to see you in a Kia, and now is the time to buy a 2013 Serena with $3,500 off, plus 0% financing for 60 months. Sunbury Motors Lincoln is making American luxury affordable by discounting a brand new Navigator $10,100. Find your next new Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, or Kia at SunburyMotors.com. Or stop in Sunbury Motor Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
You come from a land down under.
Thanks to Patrick McEnroe taking about 20 minutes out of his schedule to talk with us. It's all part of what we try to do here. We try to get you to the big events as much as possible while also staying local. That's why we had Kayla Klein on. And then you go to Greg Cosell of NFL Films. You go to Joe Susan Dave Paulson with Bucknell. We've had high school coaches on, and then we transition to Patrick McEnroe in Melbourne. We get Bill O'Brien on the show when he made his decision about what he wanted to do about Penn State. We've had Patrick Chambers on. Tim Brando from CBS. I mean, on and on, and what, you know, what we're trying to doing try what we're trying to accomplish. That's why we're going to take the show to the U.S. Open Golf Championship, why we're going to go to the Pocono 500. And it's all part of, you know, getting wheels on to talk about Phillies baseball, getting Greg Brown on to talk about the Pirates. I mean, on and on. I mean, just we're trying to get, you know, every Big Ten announcer's made and has certainly made a trip to this show. But this is what we try to do. We try to local, and then we try to get national to come on the local show. That's what we try to do. In between, we get that confusing ramble between 4 and 4:30 yesterday about the Super Bowl being a one-day event, and that's why people like football.
Only confusing you. It's crystal clear to me and several of my followers on Twitter.
I'm sure they both were intrigued.